And welcome to Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He's Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Bennell with you for the next 60 minutes. Two ways to interact with us here on the program, 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter. We are going to continue to preview the upcoming 2018 NFL Draft. We're going to hear from three guests today. We're going to cover Boston College prospects, Wyoming prospect Josh Allen, and then we will move in the direction of San Diego State. So stay tuned for that, and we're going to try to fit in as many phone calls as we can throughout the duration of the program, but certainly a lot to tackle over the next hour as we inch closer and closer, finally, Paul, to the draft.
Yeah, it's only about 3 weeks away now, Lance, and I can't tell you that I'm any less or more anxious. It just seems to be stagnant. Every day seems to go by like just by a millimeter on the calendar. But I'll tell you this. The one thing that continues to happen each and every day, the trade winds continue to swirl. People continue to speculate who's moving up, who's moving down. And that's not going to stop until the draft actually happens. Because there are too many teams that need quarterbacks who are going to be sucked into making a deal or at least going to be tempted to make a deal, that this conversation is just not going to be quieted.
Speculation will continue to unravel as we inch closer to the draft. With that being said, speaking of the draft, we're going to have our first guest up here, and we're going to focus on the Boston College prospects in the upcoming draft. And now we are joined by Peter Cronin, former Boston College and NFL linebacker. He's also Boston College's radio analyst on WEEI. Peter, Lance Bennell, Paul Dottino with you here on Giants.com, Big Blue Kickoff Live. Appreciate the time. How's everything?
Everything's great except it's snowing here, and I think based on watching Good Morning America this morning, it's snowing down there too.
Indeed, so, it is. We can relate to your circumstances as well, Peter. Yeah, spring is not ready to arrive.
No,
apparently.
No, it's great football weather.
Well, that's what it is.
Can't complain
about that.
It absolutely is. It absolutely is great football weather. In fact, when I played for the Redskins, we'd say it was Redskin weather, but I suppose the Giants said the same thing. So,
indeed,
all good.
Absolutely. All right, well, Peter, let's start with Harold Landry, who probably is the most appealing prospect coming out of Boston College. I know he dealt with an ankle injury this past season, and his numbers dipped slightly as a result of that. How much do you attribute his lack of production perhaps to the ankle injury or versus other factors?
Well, I think he was the star of the show coming out. Opted to not enter the draft last year. Typical BC kid, you know, smart kid, made a commitment to his parents to get his degree. So that was a driving factor. He also had the benefit of coaching from Paul Pasqualoni, who's now the D-line coach out in Detroit. So and Paul had come out of the NFL, so he had the benefit of a NFL caliber coach in college. And, you know, had great expectations last year based on his productivity as a junior. Unfortunately, two things occurred. Number one was, you know, a lot of teams schemed him early. And you know, they found ways to double-team him a lot. Got very creative about making him, you know, kind of minimizing his disruptiveness. And teams were effective doing that. So the result is, you know, a couple of guys on the defense, they ended up having breakout years because they weren't getting double teamed and they weren't getting schemed. So, you know, it was good for the Boston College defense, but not necessarily good for Harold. And then, of course, the unfortunate injury came about midseason, and that turned into a major concern because he wasn't going to have the opportunity to put up the kind of numbers he had the year before because of the injury. So, you know, it still came out of the combine, high marks, really kind of lit it up there, had some issues, but as everybody does, because you're under a microscope when you're in the combine, but Harold's quite a talent.
There are some people, Pete, who told me at the combine, I was out there for 3 days, and aside from the underwear Olympics, which we all know can be skewed in any way, shape, or form that you want to do them, there were some people who thought to me that Landry might be potentially the best edge rusher in this draft. Then there were others who said to me, much like Leonard Floyd, who wound up with the Chicago Bears a couple of years ago, he might only be an edge rusher and not hold up very well against the run in the National Football League. What's your take?
Well, you know what? He's a little light in the backside. You know, that's kind of my take. He's extremely athletic. He's got great hands, not overly tall. That's going to be an issue for him at 6'3". And you look at the the prototypical impact defensive ends in the National Football League today. They're three down players. You know, they're big enough to stand up against the run. They're athletic enough to create pressure off the edge. So to have that unique combination of size and speed, you know, it's there's a number of them in the league right now, and where Harold is on that scale, the thing where Harold is, although I mentioned he's a little not overly tall at 6'3", he's got athleticism it's off the charts. He's got tremendous hands. He's got that edge burst. He can change direction. One thing that was very impressive was his ability to bend off the edge, where he's actually, like he said, the palms of his hands on the surface of the football field. And you got a 320-pound offensive lineman trying to go down and block him. It can't happen. But it shows his athleticism and flexibility. The question is, what happens if you put another 20 pounds on him? And that's, you know, that's going to be the kind of the wild card, because if he's 20 pounds heavier with the same level, same burst, same athleticism, he could be a dominant player. On the other hand, if he's unable to get bigger, if he does get bigger and he slows down, okay, then that doesn't work either. But if he is able to pick up a little bit more size, he could probably be that three down player that people expect him to be.
With his athleticism, do you believe that he can actually do some coverage assignments, or is that not something you'd want him to do anyway because he's so good as a pass rusher, you just want him going forward?
Well, they put him in space quite a bit his junior year. They ran a very multiple, very diverse defense. That's another little subset of this is, this isn't just line up and go defense that they play up here. You know, there's a lot of complexity to it, and it speaks to his ability to absorb defenses conceptually and execute on them, which is in many cases that's a big transition for kids coming out of college. So, but I believe that this guy is a guy that they had success with in space. And that's a big adjustment, you know. And I played down 3 years in college. When they stood me up my senior year, thank God they didn't throw the ball much, because as learning to play in space and understanding kind of coverage schemes, I think he's athletic enough. They ended up matching him up quite a bit. And the way it worked out is they match him up with you match up with a running back in many cases, and he could run with the running backs. And, you know, you'd figure that's a mismatch an offensive coach would like. But he held up pretty well. Didn't do a lot of it, but when he did play in space, I thought he was representative. So I think there's some flexibility there in a hybrid role where they could actually use him as a pass rusher, as a designated pass rusher, and possibly, in coverage. You know, there's no question about it. He's a wide body. I mean, a big body, should I say. He's got long arms. And again, that athleticism, it's hard to hide that. Can't coach it. You know, you get it from the crib. So, he's got some tools there that could probably be used a lot of different ways.
And then finally, where do you see him then fitting in this first round? Because everybody does seem to think he's a top of the half of the first round. Do you think he's high enough to be a top six, top seven, top ten pick? Or is that you're hearing?
I think that's a real reach because of the kind of senior year he had.
Okay.
You know, he's everybody who's, you know, they know what they're looking at. All the smart guys look at him and go, that guy's the number one pick. He's an impact player. He's got all his tangibles are very, very good. He's got some really good intangibles that go along with it, so he's a good bet. But I think as far as where the needs are in the league right now, he probably slips to the back half of the first round.
Talking with Peter Cronin, former Boston College and NFL linebacker, Boston College radio analyst. You mentioned he came back for his senior year. Peter, just from a personality standpoint, leadership standpoint, I mean, what has jumped out to you about him over the course of the time that you've covered him?
Well, he emerged into a leadership role You know, when you're the marquee player in a program, kids respond differently. You know, you guys are experienced enough to know that you really don't know what you're going to get, because leadership is an interesting thing. Is because I believe you can develop leadership skills. I also believe that most people who have leadership capabilities are born with them. It's a kind of an instinctive thing. So, he was put into a position where, by virtue of the level of contribution he was making, on the field, kind of made him a de facto leader. But I think he also emerged off the field, in the locker room, in the community, the football community. You know, he was a guy that people looked to. And like I said, it was very unfortunate that the injury kind of short-circuited his senior year, but was a guy that definitely showed those intangible capabilities that people look towards. And I think it's something that's worked to his benefit when he gets in the league.
One other guy who I think we wanted to talk to you about was the cornerback up there. Is it Item? Is that how he pronounces it?
Yeah, yeah,
Isaac?
Yeah.
Peter, it's a deep draft for corners. They're going to be third and fourth round corners who are going to have an opportunity to make 53-man rosters, I think, this season. And he's one of them. What can you tell us about him that might make him a legitimate prospect?
Well, he's rangy. He's deceptive because, you look at his tangibles. They got him at 6'1". He looks like he's 6'3". You know, he's a long arms, long legs. He's had the benefit, the evolution of the Boston College defense over the last couple of years. You know, in the ACC, you got to play man coverage because the receivers, everybody's got a guy or a couple of guys that can just rip you down the field. So if you're just sitting in zone all the time, you're really going to ask them for trouble. So they moved a couple of years ago to be much more of a man type of defense from a scheme standpoint. And Isaac was a guy who he really absorbed the man techniques. And he, like I said, he's deceptive because he looks taller than 6'1", got these really long arms. And the thing too about him, he's another smart kid. You know, he's going to pick up coverage. He's going to pick up schemes. He's going to understand concepts. And you can't discount the value of a kid making that intellectual leap from college to the professional levels. I think it's a very important piece of this whole puzzle to guys who emerge quickly. The other thing about him is he's got a real edge. He's nasty. He's jarring. He's got a lot of energy. He's a guy that is going to make it tough on wide receivers. It's just his nature. So the other piece of this thing is he's an outstanding special teams player. So when you get a guy who, because of the way they play at Boston College, they're putting their best guys on the field all the time. Isaac is a guy who he's an impact player on special teams. So that's going to be a great contributing factor to him making a roster. So he's a guy that you bring in. Maybe he lands and he's a special teams guy. They groom him for situational defense. They put him in nickel and dime packages. They develop him and he becomes a guy that might play for you for 10 years. You know, that's the kind of kid he is.
Is he strictly a border corner, Pete, or did he play any rover or slot or any safety? Was he strictly outside?
He's everything. They play. The way they play at BC is they run these sub packages within the defense. So you're going to get guys playing. You're playing the boundary corner. You're playing field corner. You're playing a lot of safety mix. They're playing, and he did a lot of matchup coverage too. He was one of the better cover guys. So he matched up against some pretty darn good football players. I think that you're very diverse. Capabilities from in terms of coverage is not limited to any one position.
Peter, last one for me. I know Cameron Moore is the other corner. He's not nearly as highly ranked as the other corner that you just spoke about, but I believe he has experience as a nickel, and he also has special teams experience. So how much upside does Cameron Moore, you think, have to potentially maybe land on a roster moving forward?
Well, Cam Moore is an interesting kid. He's been injured, so he's a big unknown. The thing about him is when he was a younger player at Boston College, you know, he doesn't have the tangibles that these other two guys have. But what he does have is an intangible component. And Steve Adazio, head coach of BC, frequently would talk about him. He said, you know, Cam Moore, they put him in out of necessity. They played a lot of young guys early, and they benefited from that later on when they became juniors and seniors. And so they had a lot of reps behind them. Cam Moore played all the positions back there, played nickel, played dime, played, you know, he matched up. And so I said to him, I said to Adazio once, I said, this kid's pretty interesting kid. What do you think? He goes, he's not afraid of the bright lights. In fact, he migrates to them. So wow. He likes being on stage. And he's a guy who made tremendous athletic plays for Boston College over the last couple of years, you know, making, you know, game changers that kind of get caught in the wash. But maybe it's that last burst of speed to get a hand in front of a ball over the top or the open field tackle. You know, the kid made a lot of football plays. He's a darn good football player.
All right. Well, Peter Cronin, kind enough to give us a few minutes, former Boston College NFL linebacker, Boston College radio analyst. Greatly appreciate the time and the insight. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Pete.
All right, fellas. Take care. Take care.
All right, so there is a look and a description of the Boston College prospects. That is stop one on our trio tour over the course of this program. Mm-hmm. We're going to be heading in the direction of Wyoming. But, you know, Landry is somebody that he seems to think has perhaps some of the versatility to play, I think, maybe in a 3-4 and a 4-3.
Well, what's interesting to me is that he was saying later in the first round, you know, yep, second half of the first round, if the Giants should make a deal with the Bills at 12, certainly that would be a guy who might be under consideration there, because you can never have enough edge rushers, for sure. But I think you can rule him out based on what we just heard. He would not be a top 10 consideration, at least if Pete's rumblings are to hold any merit, and I certainly believe him. That was interesting, because I will tell you, there were people at the Combine, a couple of folks said to me, oh, yeah, he's a top 10 guy. Apparently not.
Well, he brought up the point that he feels the lack of production, numbers-wise, and the injury could contribute
to the production
falling
and holding up against the run.
Yeah, which obviously is critical, especially if you're going to invest a top-10 pick in a defensive
line. Yeah.
You want to be able to keep him on the field.
Got to be a three-down guy if you're a top-10 pick.
Absolutely. So that's something I think that teams are going to have to take into consideration. All right, so that was Boston College. Now we're going to switch gears to Wyoming, and they have one particular prospect.
Yes, they do.
And that is quarterback Josh Allen. And now to help us break his upside down is Kevin McKinney, radio analyst for the Wyoming Cowboy Sports Network. Kevin, Lance Metal, Paul DeTino with you here on Giants.com, Big Blue Kickoff Live. Appreciate the time. How's everything?
Everything's going fine. Happy to be with you.
Hi, Kevin.
Well, Josh Allen had his pro day. I know he's also been working with Jordan Palmer, Carson Palmer's younger brother, former NFL quarterback. There's big questions about his ability to consistently make the throws based on his completion percentage and some of his mechanics. I know Jordan Palmer's been working with. Kevin, what have you seen improvement-wise since the end of the season to now his pro day in terms of him tweaking some of those mechanics?
Well, I'll tell you, it was really amazing how much he had changed from when we saw him in the bowl game in December to his pro day. I give a lot of credit to Jordan Palmer, because they worked together, I think, probably 2 months. Josh, much better footwork, much more comfortable. I thought he did a really good job with his touch passes. We all know he's got a huge arm and he can throw the ball a mile. But if he had a downside while he was here, it was the short, medium range passes where you needed to put a little more touch on it. And he was much more effective in his pro day, at least, in that area than we had seen him here.
Let me ask you this, Kevin. In terms of the decision-making process, many folks will tell me that, okay, the arm's the arm, the skill set's the skill set. And even the accuracy thing you can maybe work on. But the decision-making process, when you jump from college to the National Football League and you've got these schemes and these crazy, funky pre-snap motions that are going on the other side of the field, how do you suspect he is going to deal with that? Because he'll see stuff that he has never seen before in the NCAA.
Well, no doubt about that. And I think that's something that he's going to have to work on. He's very capable. He's a guy who spent a lot of time in the film room. He's got a great feel for that kind of thing. But like anything else, he's going to have to observe and see what's going on and get a feel for it. But he's very good at decision making. He was outstanding on the field. He's also very good in the film room. I don't think he's going to have a problem with that. I think that. He's got a really good football mind, and he made a lot of great decisions for the Cowboys through his time here. And I know that's a challenge, and that's something that he's going to really have to work on, but I believe he's very capable of doing that.
Kevin, whenever we evaluate quarterbacks, obviously where they go to school is something that everybody tends to take into consideration. And just like Carson Wentz went to North Dakota State, there's questions about, well, can a Wyoming quarterback make a strong transition from the level of competition he went up against to the NFL? I was looking over his numbers. I mean, against Power 5 foes like Iowa and Oregon, the numbers don't necessarily jump off the page. How much stock do you put in the competition that he went up against is indicative of what he can do on the NFL level?
Well, I think that is the thing that everybody questions, is just how he played against Nebraska and Oregon and Iowa. And I think that is probably a little bit of a product of the Cowboys themselves and what kind of personnel Wyoming had against those teams. I think that he was scrambling for his life in a couple of those games, and so that certainly showed up on his completion percentage. But I don't know. I just feel like Josh, probably like Wentz, he's going to be able to step up and with different personnel and with the training he's going to get, I think he'll be just fine in that regard. And I know that's a question, but I've seen a lot of Josh, and I think that he's, as I said earlier, he's very capable of stepping up and playing well no matter the competition.
Kevin, I don't mind telling you, he is my favorite quarterback in this quarterback class. I've been telling our viewers this for months. I love his skill set, and if I were to take a quarterback, he would be my guy. But let me ask you this. In terms of the pressure that he's going to face in the NFL, especially if he were to go to a big market city and a team that they're going to pick him high in the draft, they probably need to turn it around because they haven't had such a good record. How will he deal with that situation? Because I don't mean to be disrespectful in any way, but I don't think the media spotlight in Wyoming is very hot.
Well, I think you're probably right on that. But, you know, I think that he's handled every situation. Now, we've been putting pressure on him since last June or even earlier with all the media that's come through Laramie and been involved with him. And, you know, he just did a great job. To know him is to really like him even more, I think, you guys. And he's handled all of that very, very well. He was, I think, every major network and newspaper and magazine came through here at some point through the summer and then during his season. And he just did a great job of handling that. You know, I talked to Jordan Palmer about that, and Jordan, who's done a great job with him, he said that he's going to handle that very well. He said he's one of the favorite guys I've worked with. His personality, his demeanor. I think he's ready to do this. I think he's going to be probably a little bit surprising to some people as he deals with more of a big-time media market just because he was in Laramie. He is very capable of that, and I think you're going to be surprised at how he – responds and how he handles it.
Kevin, I'm very, I should say, not surprised by your answer, because when I was at the Combine, I listened to the 15-minute media sessions of all of the top four quarterback prospects. I thought Josh Allen absolutely aced it and was by far the winner of the media sessions. He had such poise, such command, such leadership qualities. To me, that's the kind of guy I want in my huddle, and I just thought he aced it. So I'm not surprised by your answer, but I wanted to hear you say it.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, I totally agree with you. I think that Josh checks all the boxes, and we've been around with him and worked closely with him through his time at Wyoming. And I'm just really anxious for this to happen and for him to get his opportunity, because I believe he's going to be very impressive to whomever drafts him.
Talking with Kevin McKinney, radio analyst for the Wyoming Cowboys Sports Network. Kevin, I'm curious. I mean, you've had a lot of interaction, I'm sure, with head coach Craig Ball, and he was at North Dakota State with Carson Wentz. How much does Craig feel there are a lot of similarities between what Carson accomplished versus what Josh can?
Well, I'll tell you, Ball feels very good about that. I think that he compares them favorably, number one. I think that maybe one or the other has a little something on the other in some categories. But in terms of being able to handle a huddle and be a leader and be successful, he compares them very favorably. I think that maybe Carson might be a little faster, but Josh has great escapability. He's an outstanding runner. But I think in that very important leadership category, they're very, very similar. And I think Craig is he feels very confident that Josh can handle the NFL.
You know, we know that all these NFL teams do extensive research on all of these prospects, not just looking at the films, but they do a lot of conversations to find out what they can about these guys. Do you have a feeling right now as to some teams that really seem to be very hot on his trail?
Well, I have only heard what I've heard, and certainly, you know, maybe the Giants. I don't know. Maybe the Bills have been mentioned a great deal. Denver, of course, since it's local. Even the Jets have been here, and we've heard about them. But it's just such a crapshoot that those are teams that have been here. Of course, the Browns have been here, and I think we had 18 teams at his pro day. So, you know, I don't have a great insight bit on him. I don't know who does. But, I know the answer to that. Nobody. So, you know, we'll find out at the end of the month, and it's going to be very exciting for this institution. It's going to be very exciting for Josh.
Well, it will certainly be interesting to see where all of these quarterback prospects land, including Josh Allen. Kevin McKinney, radio analyst, Wyoming Cowboys Sports Network. Kevin, greatly appreciate the time and the insight. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Kevin.
My pleasure. Nice talking to you guys.
Same here. So that is the latest in terms of Josh Allen and what he accomplished at Wyoming. And now it seems as if Jordan Palmer, by working with him, has helped tweak his mechanics over the last few months.
We have found out over the last several years that these quarterback coaches, if you will, for lack of a better term, I used to be called throwing coaches. They're now quarterback coaches because they're not just dealing with guys' mechanics. They're also helping coach them up in terms of their demeanor and the other kinds of things they'll have to deal with as they become professional quarterbacks. So I do think they're quarterback coaches now more than they were just throwing coaches. And I think that, you know, when you get a guy who's coming out of a program such as Wyoming – who hasn't had the notoriety, at least earlier in his career, only later. I mean, who knew about Josh Allen, honestly, as an NFL prospect until this season?
Well, he was at a community college
before
he even
got
to Wyoming. Yeah.
So that's the kind of guy, more than anybody else, who can benefit from stuff that Jordan Palmer is going to tell him. Because it's that stuff. For example, and I hate to bring up Davis Webb again, but he had Jim Zorn be his private quarterback coach, tutor, to get him ready. I think in a lot of ways, we all think that, you know, and too many people make this mistake, NCAA football is not the minor leagues of the NFL. NCAA football is there because those coaches and those players are trying to win and do what's best for their programs. They're not necessarily doing everything that they need to do to groom a guy to become an NFL player. There's a difference there.
Well, because a lot of teams don't run pro-style offenses.
No question. But it's also everything else about it. It's not just the X's and the O's. It's also preparing the guy for dealing with what he's going to deal with in the NFL emotionally, mentally, the environment. No, you get a quarterback's coach now who gets one of these prospects, like a Josh Allen, gets him coming out of school, Darnold or Rosen, whoever it is, and says, okay, now wait a minute. Yeah, I know what you did when you were in the film room at college. I get that. I get what you did in those games. But now when you are going to be a pro quarterback, this is the enchilada that you're going to have to digest. And I think that in a lot of ways, those coaches can be more than just valuable. They can be like extra valuable. They can almost be more important. It's almost like putting the finishing touches on that new car before it gets to the showroom as it's coming out of the factory. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Or maybe the cheese on the meatball pie.
There you go. A little,
right?
Little food analogy.
Gotta put
we
the
never
cheese.
Shy away from that.
Gotta put
yes.
the cheese on the meatball pie.
Yeah.
And I think that to me has become a much more critical component of a college prospect's potential than I think we gave it credit for in years past.
Seasoning. That's what I would say. It's
fine.
The seasoning for that player to then take the next step. And Jordan
gotta
Palmer,
put breadcrumbs in the meatballs.
That's fine. Hey, I'm okay with the breadcrumbs, the cheese, the whole nine yards, Paul, okay? We can doll it up all you want. Palmer, though, also, he went to UTEP, so I think that helps because he came from somewhat of a similar, not necessarily Wyoming, but a smaller program on mm-hmm. the map, so he could at least maybe relate to a player like Josh Allen. But you're right, it's not just about mechanics, X's and O's, dropping back out of the snap. It's also about understanding the media, what to expect when you go to the combine, what to expect when you get into the meeting room for the interviews with these coaches and executives, all of those dynamics that are in play.
You know, I'll never forget when Jim Zorn told us that one of the biggest things, the most important things he told Davis Webb was, you need to have command of that huddle. You need to have that demeanor, that confidence, that assertiveness. You have to sell the play to the guys in the huddle and make sure that when they look in your eyes, they can believe that the play is going to work, that you believe in the play and that you believe in them. That's a component that, you know, you don't hear a lot about, but it is important because if I'm in your huddle, and I look at you, and I'm not feeling so sure and confident about what you're going to do as the quarterback of my team. How do you think I feel when I'm breaking the huddle to go up to the ball, to the line of scrimmage? I'm probably not feeling as good as I need to be. So, you know, that's the kind of stuff we're talking about, and it goes so often unnoticed, I think. Anyway.
Well, and also making the transition to playing under center, too, for a lot of these quarterbacks.
No question.
Because if they're out of the shotgun, you know, there's also different jargon, different dynamics that are in play.
Yeah.
So all of that, I think, is something that a former NFL player, a former coach can aid in complementing what the previous coaching staff taught you when you were in school.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing I will say, though, about getting them mentally prepared to just handle being an NFL quarterback. There are a number of schools, even though they're not necessarily running a pro-style offense, Paul, where there's enough of a media contingent that I think those players are getting a feel for what it's like being in the locker room, what it's like getting those questions asked after the contest. You know, I mean, there are a lot of these programs that they're the biggest thing in these towns, mm-hmm. and there is no professional team. So they're the closest to a professional team. So I think there is that exposure for a lot of these players, even though it's not like an NFL system from an X's and O's standpoint. That can't be overlooked. They are getting
fair.
A feel for
that's
at least interacting with the media.
Anyway, I'm glad that Kevin backed up, though, what I've been trying to tell you guys since the combine. Josh Allen just blew it away in the media interview. He was that good. I mean, he really came across as a leader, as a mature athlete who was prepared to direct his team, you know, down the field. You get the feeling just by talking to him. If you never even saw his film, you'd say, I feel good about this guy. He's a quarterback. You could pick that up just with your antenna before you even look at the film. And then when you look at the film and you see the size, the mobility, the arm strength, the ability to make all the throws, and it's like, okay, wow. You know, Josh Allen, he's the best quarterback in this class, I'm telling you.
201-939-4513. That is the telephone number. Hashtag Giants Chat. We're going to be hearing from Rich Ornberger in a little bit, former Penn State and NFL offensive lineman, as we will shift gears to the San Diego State prospects. We've already covered Boston College. We've covered Wyoming as well. And there's a lot of chatter that there could be maybe some more moves atop the draft because of everybody making the push for the quarterback right now. And, you know, Allen and Darnold and Mayfield and Jackson, most of these guys have had their pro days already. So we've seen whether or not there's been any tweaks to the mechanics and whether or not they've made strides since they finished up their collegiate season. At this point, Paul, I mean, there's not any more that you can really add to the plate at this point. I think we really have an idea of where all of these quarterbacks stand.
Although Kevin was pretty clear that he thought that Allen's footwork was significantly better since the season ended in the bowl game, which, of course, does lead to the entire accuracy question, which so many people have hit him on.
Well, that was one of the things about him throwing off his back foot and that impacting throws down the field and also maybe putting a little too much mustard on the intermediary throws, and that obviously impacting his completion percentage.
You know what could really be a bummer for him? Much like we talked about with David Carr when he was drafted by Houston as a rookie, suffered an NFL record 76 sacks. If Josh Allen winds up going somewhere where he does have to do a lot of running for his life and he's fully capable of doing that and throwing on the run, it will screw up the mechanics. Anything that they've done to try to fix him could easily be undone if he's running for his life. And then he may come out of the gate with poor accuracy, and then people are going to get all over him for it because it's not what, you know, they expected, the improvement. A lot of this depends on where a guy goes and how quickly he's thrown in.
The system, the scheme, and remember, there's a lot of different voices that players are exposed to, and sometimes they're telling you one thing, and then another coach wants you to do it another way. So all of that obviously is relevant to the conversation. Well, San Diego State doesn't have a quarterback to talk about, has a few other prospects, though, of note, and we are now joined by Rich Ornberger, former Penn State and NFL offensive lineman. He's the San Diego State radio analyst for Extra 1360 in San Diego. He's kind enough to give us a few minutes. Rich, you got Lance Meadow and Paul Dottino with you. You're on Giants.com, Big Blue Kickoff Live. Appreciate the time. How's everything?
Yeah, very good. Glad to be on with you fellas. What's going on?
Doing very well. Well, we want to break down a few of the players that you have kept close tabs on throughout the course of the last few seasons. And I want to start at the running back position with Rashad Penny. And I think it's interesting, Rich, the fact that 2 years ago you had Danelle Pumphrey and Penny. You had really a two-headed monster in the backfield. And then Pumphrey gets drafted by the Eagles. He was hurt. And Penny now has the backfield all to himself. What type of a change have you seen out of Penny since he really became the true number one back this season?
Well, what I saw wasn't a change. What I saw was the exact same thing I saw last season, which is composure, readiness, preparation, the ability to show that not only can he do what he was doing not just a year ago in the backup capacity, but on an every down basis. That guy was rarely off the field. He carried the ball a ton. That's what San Diego State does, is run the football. And he showed that he could be the featured back in an offense that leans so heavily on the running game and still contribute in a very meaningful and important way on special teams.
You know, you played in the NFL, so I know that you understand that when people are projecting these guys, making the jump from college, there is certainly an amount of guesswork that has to go into it. But there are folks who say to me, look at his sub, you know, his 4.4 speed. He's sub 4.5. He's in the 4.4, 4.5, 4.4, 4.6, I think is what he timed out in the combine.
Yeah,
but he plays fast, right? He plays fast. He's explosive. Can score from anywhere on the field. We know about his kick returns for touchdowns. I think he's got 7 of those in his career, which is an NCAA record. And there are those who will say to me, don't be surprised if in 2 or 3 years that you're talking about him in the same breath or maybe even ahead of Saquon Barkley. Now, how nuts is that?
I mean, listen, when you compare them as far as athletes go, there's no question that Saquon Barkley, I mean, he blows everybody out of the water. What he was able to provide for us at the combine was proof positive that what you see is what you get. He is that explosive of an athlete. He is that big of a freak as far as the football field goes. But Rashad Penny, what he brings is true NFL size to the conversation. What he brings is true vision. And from the standpoint of a guy with tons of experience, look, his impact on the San Diego State offense could not be overstated. He was the whole show. He was the reason why they were a 10-win football team. He was the reason why they had another opportunity at a Mountain West title down the stretch of the season, and they went to another bowl game. He was the whole show. And the interesting thing about Penny and Barkley that people aren't talking about is how heavily Saquon Barkley was used in college versus how Penny was used. Now, he was a backup a year ago. Barkley has been a starter for 3 years. So he's got a lot less wear on the tires. We know the running back position, what they're asking of a player who's going to be a three-down back. It's intense. It's an onslaught physically. And to really kind of be that NFL-caliber, NFL-ready player, you have to have good knees, long-lasting back, you know, solid shoulders. You have to really kind of be a guy who hasn't taken a lot of hits yet. And Penny, I mean, really, he racked up 1,000 yards behind Pumphrey, like you had mentioned a year ago. And as the featured back, he rushed the ball. He was the majority of the offense. But he hasn't seen a ton of snaps from scrimmage. So he may be the healthier choice coming out of the draft.
Well, Rich, I think that's an interesting point, especially when, to your point, basically the shelf life of a running back is rather short-lived once you get to the NFL. With that being said, though, and Paul brought this up, his special teams play really jumps off the page, too. Maybe just as impressive as Barkley. How much do you think he can hold up as he moves to the NFL as a guy that perhaps gets in the teens carries per game and is used regularly as a kickoff return man? And I noticed he also returned a few punts during his college career. How realistic is that?
Well, so I actually want to tell the story of the first punt return he ever fielded as a player. It was during the Nevada game this past season as a senior. He had never done it in a game before. And he lined up, and I had a squint. I'm like, that's Penny. You know, then they used a couple of different options at punt returner. He caught his first ever punt return and took it to the house for a touchdown. Like, that's how explosive of a player he is. It's a duck to water. Every time he gets the ball in his hand, like you mentioned, he has an opportunity to score from wherever he is on the field. So as a special teams option, just given the base of knowledge we have, what he's been able to do while he was at San Diego State and how that translates, that 4.46 speed is real. I never saw him get caught from behind. The fact that he has his great vision in traffic is apparent. He doesn't make those high-risk moves where he's taking long cutbacks and trying to find something that isn't there, which is akin to what Barkley actually does. And I believe sometimes loses yardage or doesn't get as much as he could if he would have just fought for yards and fell forward. But that's more Penny's game. He's going to get you everything that's there, and he's not going to take the huge risk. And he's an animal after contact. I mean, this guy, there were games where he had people around his legs the entire game, and he still hit the 200-yard mark on the day rushing and had a fabulous day from the kick return standpoint. So wherever it is on the field, whether it's out of the backfield or it's in the kicking game, he's going to be an exciting player to watch. And, I mean, if I were going to really and truly evaluate who I think is going to have a longer, better career at this next level, and this is being completely objective. Look, I'm a Penn Stater. I'm a Nittany Lion.
That's why I'm asking you about it.
So, look, I'm in both pots here, right? I would tip my hat to Rashad Penny, and I say that looks like an NFL back who's built to last.
Well, then, Rich, I got to ask you point blank, what is he going to have to do better if he's going to reach the potential kind of career that you're talking about? Because you've certainly given him a lot of plaudits here, but I'm sure that, you know, NFL scouts and NFL coaches are going to say, hey, kid, you're a rookie in the NFL. We got to coach you up on a few things. We got to polish a couple of things up before we make you the guy. So what are those things going to be?
I'll say this. He doesn't have a lot of experience being a pass blocker. They just don't do it very much in that offense.
Yeah.
When he was in the backfield blocking, and it was rare because he also has soft hands and he can be a weapon as a pass-catching back, it was usually on play fakes where he was asked to just kind of keep his eye on one side, you know, track whether the force was coming strong or weak, and then honestly usually was able to escape on a pass route if there weren't any blitzers. So So he doesn't have a lot. He doesn't have a lot of experience pass blocking, and to be a three-down back in today's NFL, which is a pass-happy league, you absolutely need to be able to hold the line when you are pass blocking for one of these quarterbacks. Remember, it's different. In college, you can be the featured player at running back. In the NFL, that's not the case. They're paying these guys $25, $30 million a year to throw the ball around the yard. They are the most important piece on the field, and they need to be protected as such. So if you can't be relied on to do that, you're going to have a more limited role in the offense. So that's something he's going to have to play a little catch-up on.
Talking about Rich Ornberger, former Penn State NFL offensive lineman, San Diego State radio analyst. Rich, I know you said you got ties to Penn State and San Diego State, which I think is well documented, but now the fact that you just said that Penny needs to work on pass protection, maybe his receiving skills, it seems as if Barkley has been utilized in those departments at Penn State. When you compare the two of them in that department, you know, who do you think has perhaps an edge?
You know, in that case, it would have to go to Barkley. Just because of the way he's used in that offense, like it's clear that he's had more experience doing that. I will say this though, again, like Penny, he also was a good option out of the backfield to catch a bunch of passes. So as much as they could, they prefer to have him in a route than staying in the backfield next to Trace McSorley. It just wasn't what they were looking to do. And that's more of a spread offense at Penn State. So we know in the spread, it's a lot of hot routes instead of having an extra blocker, and you're looking to throw the ball, more than have max protection or a six-man protection with a running back included. So typically he was also out on routes. But I would give the upper hand to Barkley because he just has more experience with it than Penny does. Either way, you draft Barkley, you draft Penny. What I think you're going to have is two running backs who are built, like have the bodies for the workload of the NFL, who showed extreme promise at the college level, and I think are hardworking individuals and high-character guys. I've listened to a ton of interviews with Barkley. I know Penny personally. I've watched these guys develop as players and prospects now. And I think either way, you're going to have a high-quality character guy in your locker room.
Final question for me, Rich. When you look at Penny, what do you think about his ability to deal with the NFL playbook, the complexities of the pre-snap defensive reads? You know, you talk about pass protection. You talk about experience in dealing with that. A lot of it is also recognition on the field. And what, you know, you have to process that stuff. How well will he do with that? And then, quite frankly, as part B to my question, it's a little bit off the path. Do you see him as maybe, as he's getting a lot of ink in the last several weeks, does he possibly sneak into the first round? I had heard a lot of people thought originally he might be a second rounder, but, you know, since the college All-Star games, he seems to be gaining a lot of momentum.
Yeah, okay, so first things first, just as far as the NFL playbooks, you're absolutely right. The extensive language, it's going to be a learning curve for every rookie. There are some who make the jump a lot easier. I think what benefits him is going to be what system he lands in. If he lands in a system that utilizes a fullback, like a Kansas City Chiefs offense, where he's doing some similar things that he had done in the past, he may have more success early on. So it really is how much can he relate back to what he already knows, you know, because he spent all this time at San Diego State in this offense. Same could be said for Saquon Barkley and any running back, any rookie really, right, entering the NFL. You know, how well versed are you in the offense that you're going to be running at the next level? To answer the second part, I do really feel like this guy could shock people by how highly he's rated on these executives' boards in their draft room. I'm hearing now mock drafts slating him as the number two running back. You know, from very credible sources, people who watch a lot of football, a lot of film. And you're right, because he's in a mid-major like San Diego State, because he's outside of the Power Five conferences, it takes sometimes these analysts a little time to catch up on all this. The NFL are ahead of the curve because this is all they do. They have full departments scouting college potential. And Rashad Penny, I imagine, has been high on people's radar for a long time. As a matter of fact, talking with two scouts who visited San Diego State practices this year. They corroborated a story that I heard from a year ago that had he left, if he had declared early the same year as Pumphrey, he would have been drafted higher than Donnell, the featured back in that offense. He was the backup. And it's because of his size. It's because of his versatility and the fact that he lends himself to special teams well. Aside from all the things that you need a running back to do, he can help the whole team. Look, this is going to be an exciting story to watch as the draft comes. I know everybody in San Diego is excited to see where he lands. But ultimately, like every draft prospect, and we know this, it really depends on what team he lands with, the fit, and how they use these players, because it can go one of two ways. And my hope is it continues the path it's on, because it's been a ton of fun to watch.
All important factors, certainly, in terms of the success of an NFL player. Rich, before we let you go, I just want to throw out one additional player who I think is interesting, and that's Cameron Kelly, because he transitioned from safety to corner this past season. You know, what did you see out of him with him making that transition, and where do you project his strengths are as he tries to get to the NFL?
If I were to use one word to sum up how he made the transition from the safety position to corner, it would be seamless. Because if you had told me without having any context that he was the starting corner, I would have assumed that was the position he had played since he got to the school. It's not. He was a safety, and he plays the cornerback position like a safety. He's very aggressive, and he plays his role in the run extremely well, which is a very valuable and important effect to have on a defense. When you're able to not only bracket your offense, so you're protecting the outside and have success in man coverage, but then you can also rely on your corner to step up and make plays on the edge and set the edge and push things back inside and contain plays on the run as well, you've hit a home run. Now, will it translate to the next level with real NFL speed on every single snap? That remains to be seen. But another exciting player from both the standpoint of what he can bring to the field from player versatility, you know, being able to play both the corner and the safety position. We know how important the nickel position is in a lot of these defenses now. And then also the special teams aspect, because he's a real hitter at his height and weight.
Rich Hornberger, former Penn State and NFL offensive lineman, San Diego State radio analyst for Extra 1360. Rich, really greatly appreciate the time and the insight. A lot of great stuff. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Rich.
Yeah. Happy to be on with you guys anytime.
Sounds good. Rich Hornberger, once again, weighing in on the San Diego State prospects. High raving reviews in terms of what Rashad Penny could bring to an NFL team.
That's the reason I wanted him to talk about Penny, because of his Penn State connection. You know that alums always follow their guys. And I knew that he would know everything there is to know about Barkley. And so to talk about Penny as he did, even knowing that he is a huge Barkley supporter as well, that was important to me. I wanted to hear how he would compare and contrast them, and how much could he possibly gloat about Perry when, you know, Penny, in terms of he's the lesser talked about of the stud running backs in this draft. So I thought his opinion was certainly worth a lot of weight.
Well, one of the things that we've been talking an awful lot as we've been preparing for the draft is, and I mean, I don't know how you feel, I think there's a lot of depth at running back.
There are second and third rounders who are going to make it, for sure.
Perhaps other positions. Now, that doesn't mean that Barkley's not worth a high pick.
Right.
But what I'm saying is, if you don't get Barkley, I think you could find a very solid running back if you wait till maybe the latter part of the first round, the second round, or even the third round in this draft.
Well, you know, Michelle, Geis, Penny.
Yeah, there's a lot of them.
Chubb. There's a bunch of these guys who are, you know, going to be legitimate NFL players. Second and third round is going to be chock full of these guys. So the question becomes, you know, if you think that Barkley is so special, do you have to take him if you have a chance at him in the top three? Or do you think about something else and say, well, you know, second and third rounds, they're going to be full of running backs. Can we afford? Now, I know John Schmelk, one of our guys, he's a Penny guy. He really thinks you're better off, you know, drafting something else and drafting a Penny later on, or drafting a Geis. I think he's also a Geis guy. And I understand that. I really, really do. There's logic behind that thought. But I think even even Rich was very clear about the experience that Barkley had, does put him ahead of the pack.
And the pass protection aspects.
Pass protection, the playbook, just the overall experience at a huge program as well. I mean, there's a reason why Barkley's being considered as the number one guy in this draft.
Absolutely.
But the gap to a guy like Penny doesn't seem to be maybe quite as much as some folks, most of us, probably thought in November.
Well, that's why I always say, if you're an NFL executive and you're talking to your scouting department, Paul, and they tell you, okay, here's the running backs that we should consider. You know what? There's not a big disparity between a lot of these guys. That's a big part of the conversation in determining whether or not it's worth passing on a guy high in the first round. It's just like the quarterbacks. If you don't have a love affair with this group of quarterbacks, if there's not a lot of separation, and I'm Cleveland, why am I taking a quarterback number one overall if I don't see a huge difference between this group of quarterbacks?
Right.
That has to be a part of the chatter and the conversation. If the drop-off is immense, if Sam Darnold versus Josh Allen and Josh Rosen, Baker Mayfield is miles apart, then I say you take the quarterback number one. You don't even think about it.
Right.
Or you take Saquon Barkley number one because the next guy on the list lacks some of the pros that Barkley brings to the table. But if everybody's grouped together, then I think you got to think about turning to the position, Paul, where there's the biggest disparity, assuming it warrants the number two overall pick.
The shame of it is, when you look at the skill set, and Petty does have a sensational skill set, and the production is unquestioned, the lack of experience and the lack of pass pro experience is something that is definitely going to give some headaches and some stomach aches to guys in the draft room as they wrestle with how high to take him. Because in the NFL, that is not just a so-so kind of thing to worry about. It can be a major thing to worry about. You get your quarterback flattened, that's a big, big deal. It's not a small thing, no matter how terrific you are at carrying the ball, no matter how many touchdowns you can score from your side of the field. If you can't keep that quarterback healthy, your butt is going to be on the bench. You are not playing. You're not going to be able to touch that ball and score those touchdowns.
And you have to ask yourself, if that player has not had a lot of experience in that department in college,
how well is he going to do it?
How well is he going to do
quickly?
It? Exactly. That's what I was going to get
to. By the time he learns, quickly? Your quarterback is in the hospital.
Meaning, by week three, will he get it? Will training camp be enough
maybe
in the preseason?
Maybe year two.
Maybe year two. And look at the Giants, for example. I mean, we've got candidates here in-house. Paul Perkins, if you remember, did not get on the field for some time. And then, if you remember, Paul, late in the season against the Cleveland Browns, okay, the linebacker comes up the middle, and that was like his graduation. You know, everything clicked.
Right.
Stepped up, protected Eli. Wayne Goldman, same thing.
Yep.
You know, took some time for him to get on the field. David Wilson was on the field early. He had the fumbling issues, but same thing. You know, those were all areas that the running backs had similarities in. You know, when was everything going to come and fall into place?
I'm going to give you the best example of all, Tiki Barber. Tiki Barber was not very good in pass protection and didn't even show a lot of gumption for doing it earlier in his career. And then the two things that he overcame, which in my mind make him a borderline Hall of Famer, he overcame the fumbleitis, and he became much, much better and a willing participant in pass protection. Then he became a true all-around superstar. But it took time.
Now, if you're the Giants, do you say to yourself, we've got Paul Perkins, we have Wayne Gallman, players that have shown some development in that department, we can afford to take a player, Paul, if they did want to go in a younger direction again, that may not be ready to step in day one and be a pass protector. I don't think that's a stretch to say maybe they're in that position because of who else they have in the backfield. Still young, but a little bit more experience and polish on them.
It's a hard call when you have a nearly 40-year-old quarterback back there. That is a hard call.
Yeah.
Because even the slightest mistake by a rookie who busts a pass pro on a blitz could be the last play that quarterback sees for a number of weeks.
which is why experience has value, especially when you're working with the rest of the backfield that does not, only has maybe 1 or 2 years under their belt and not even 1 or 2 full years. So some interesting things that all three of our guests mentioned. We want to thank Peter Cronin, former Boston College NFL linebacker, Boston College radio analyst, Kevin McKinney, radio analyst for the Wyoming Cowboys Sports Network, and finally Rich Ornberger, former Penn State and NFL offensive lineman, San Diego State radio analyst. We've covered all three of those teams. We'll continue to do that moving forward each and every day with a new group of prospects. So once again, thanks to all the guests. If you missed any part of that, the full show will be up and archived on Giants.com. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the rest of your Monday right here on Giants.com. Have a good one.